Howdy, y'all. Welcome to our next episode about Let's Talk About Poop podcast, where every Monday I do a podcast and a live stream where I answer your questions you have about a topic. The format of this show is that we typically do a deep dive on a topic. And for those of you guys who are watching on the live stream, we answer any questions you guys may have as well. If you're joining for the first time, my name is Dr. Islam. And yes, I'm a board certified gastroenterologist trained at the Mayo Clinic. I work a little bit of gastroenterology. Come see us for all your GI needs. So we have a good show today. Today we'll be talking about constipation, one of the more common problems that I see as a GI doctor, but also it's a very common problem that people have also in the primary care world as well. So get your constipation questions ready. We have a great show today. And let me know if you're watching this on live stream, where you're watching this at, and also if you're watching this live or in the replay, if you're able to give us a five-star review on our podcast on Spotify and Apple iTunes. Now let's go into the deep dive, constipation. So on today's topic, we'll talk about exactly what the symptoms are of constipation. You actually may be constipated and you may not even realize it. We'll talk about some of the causes of constipation that we see as in the GI world. We'll also talk about how you can prevent constipation. And then we'll talk about recommendations that I have to treat your constipation as well. So we're doing a deep dive on this. So first topic, what exactly are symptoms of constipation? You'd be surprised, this can fluctuate between individuals. So some of the more common symptoms includes obviously not going to the bathroom as consistently as you would like. Now there is a medical definition for the number of bowel movements you need to have per week for you to be constipated. That number is less than 3 per week. So meaning you can have 4 bowel movements per week and still be medically not constipated. You actually don't have the medical definition of constipation. Now, obviously, there are other symptoms that can occur with constipation. So things like straining for a long time, pushing for a long time, having difficulty with the evacuation of your stools, having to sit there and just push. And you can also have other associations with constipation, including bloating, distension, poor appetite, a feeling like your rectum is blocked, and also just the feeling of having to actually manually remove stool from your bottom. These are all signs of constipation. But did you know, also, you can go to the bathroom every single day and still be constipated? Absolutely you can. We have a lot of patients that are like this. This is actually called pelvic floor dysfunction. And what the main issue is that your pelvic floor is not working appropriately. So typically it's in females who've been pregnant, maybe they had an episiotomy, a history of some OB-GYN surgeries, trauma in the rectum, things like that. These can cause your anal rectal muscles to not work correctly. And literally, your bottom is tight. It's so tight that nothing wants to pass through. So the best analogy that I have, it's like having a toothpaste with a cap on. No matter how much you squeeze that toothpaste, nothing is going to leave that cap until you open up that cap. That is the exact same problem when it comes to constipation and pelvic floor dysfunction. So these patients who have this condition, they go to the bathroom almost every single day, but they complain of not being able to completely empty their bowels. So what happens is that their rectum gets full and the rectum muscles are so tight that it opens up and closes, open and closes. So you have these little pellets that come out. And so they're feeling like they're going to the restroom every single day, but they have incomplete evacuation. They're not emptying everything out. And so patients are surprised when I tell them, hey, you're actually constipated. They're like, doc, I go to the bathroom every day. I cannot be constipated. I'm like, no, you are. They're like, doc, are you sure? I'm like, yo, I am. I'm the poop guru. And that's exactly what's happening. So if this happened to you, come see us because we can find out what's going on. But when it comes to constipation, here's the deal is that what I really wanted to focus on is how do you feel when you use the restroom? It does not matter to me if you go 2 times per week, if you're feeling fine, you don't have the pain, the bloating, the sense of not getting everything out, because that's what I want to focus on. And so I don't want you to focus on the number of times you use the restroom. That doesn't matter to me. What matters to me more is, are you feel like you're having a complete bowel movement? Is everything emptying out? Are you pushing things out? Do you feel like, I feel so much better? Because if you don't, even if you go every single day, that actually may be an issue with constipation that we need to address and really get down into a deep dive as to why you're having those symptoms of constipation. All right, so now that we talked about that, why are you constipated? So there are some lifestyle reasons why you can be constipated, and there are some medical reasons why you can be constipated. So lifestyle reasons, obviously, not having enough water. You need that water to allow that log of stool to pass through. It adds like a slide to allow things to pass through a lot easier. You don't have enough fiber. Fiber acts as a way to kind of make your stool together to build up bulk of your stool, especially soluble fiber, the one called psyllium, P-S-Y-L-L-I-U-M. This is the fiber that we recommend to get you for the fuller bowel habits, to get you kind of more fuller bowel movements as well. Sometimes not having enough magnesium can be a reason why you're having constipation. So sometimes adding some magnesium can loosen up that stools to make it slide through a lot easier. Maybe you're inactive. If you don't move around, if you just sit around, your body thrives on moving around. So even physical movement, even a little bit, will allow you to use the restroom easier. Timing. Do you have a rhythm? Now, let me tell you, TMI here. I use the restroom at the exact same time every single day. I'm like clockwork. It's like boom, boom. When I wake up in the morning, there we go. That's what we do. And so my body knows that that's the time when I'm going to use the restroom. It thrives on that rhythm. It needs that rhythm. And this is what your body needs as well. So if you don't develop that rhythm to allow you to have better bowel movements, your body is not going to want to have a bowel movement. It's not going to want to poop. And if it doesn't want to poop, guess what? You're going to be constipated. So you need to develop that rhythm where you're going to the restroom every single day, every single time. Now that's kind of, then obviously sometimes certain diets can make you more constipated. The most common one being the keto diet that can really do that. Now there are also medical conditions that you can have that can make you more constipated. So number one is pelvic floor dysfunction. Once again, this is a condition in which the pelvic floor muscles are not working appropriately. They're too tight. You are literally anally retentive. So meaning things get stuck in your rectum and it doesn't want to pass. So you just open, close that rectum. So you have little pelvis that are coming out. Very common condition. We see this in a lot of females. We can test this with just a rectal exam, which literally I have you poo. I just see or feel the movement of your bowel movements or your rectum muscles. If it doesn't work properly, I can say that you have this. Or we can even do what's called anal rectal manometry, where I actually measure the pressure of your rectum and see how it works. And the way to treat this is not more medications. Just like I have to give you physical therapy if I hurt my shoulder, it's the exact same thing with pelvic floor therapy. If you're hurting your rectum muscles, I need to give you physical therapy or send you to a physical therapist to get you going better. That's reason number one. Another medical reason is a condition called IBS, or irritable bowel syndrome. Very common condition. A lot of people have this. Now, the predominant symptom of IBS is pain or discomfort. So you can't have IBS without pain. But if you have some pain or discomfort that gets better with a bowel habit or bowel movement, that can give you the diagnosis of IBS. We can do an investigation to find out if that's the case or not, but also consider putting on medication specifically for IBS. There are certain medications that are currently approved just for IBS-C constipation, and we can use this to help you go in, to help you have better bowel movements. Then you have chronic idiopathic constipation. It's kind of another medical term. This is when you have constipation without the effect of pain. And so there are other treatment options we can do for this, though it's still within the medical realm as well. And then lastly, you have slow transit constipation. This means your colon doesn't work. It just sits there and things don't want to move. They don't want to get through. Now, the important thing about slow transit constipation is that 20% of these patients also have pelvic floor issues, meaning we got to figure out what is going on. Is it the pelvic floor? Is it the colon? Is it the contraction of the colon? Is it the muscles of the rectum? So there may be more aggressive evaluation to find out what the true cause is, because the treatment of one may not help out with the treatment of the other one. We want to make sure we can get that taken care of for you. So we really need a deep dive to find out exactly which one it is, so we can hopefully address and get that taken care of. Now, when I have patients with constipation, a couple things that I try to figure out. So I try to see if I can classify what type of patient you are. Where are you in the spectrum of constipation? Do you have IBS? Do you have pelvic floor issues? Do you have chronic idiopathic constipation? What is going on? So the questions I ask is, number one, do you have pain? And is that pain relieved with having a bowel movement? All right, that gives, if it is, if the answer is yes, this gives me an idea this may be IBS-C. Or do you have pellets coming out? Just you try to poop, but nothing comes out. You strain, but whenever you have a bowel movement, you just small little pellets. Maybe that is what's going on in your rectum. Do you have a history of an episiotomy? Is that the issue? Is it a pelvic floor problem? Because that treatment is very different. It's a matter of dietary changes or lifestyle changes. Are you on a keto diet? Are you on medications that will make you constipated, like opiates or pain medications? Because sometimes addressing that will get down to the root cause of what's going on. But let's assume that we did that and we find out what's going on, then I need to figure out, okay, what are some of the diagnostic tests that we need to do? So typically, we may do some routine blood testing, check your blood count, check your thyroid to make sure it's not out of whack, check your calcium, magnesium, make sure those are in play. Sometimes we'll do imaging like an x-ray or CT scan so I can see how much stool is in that colon or that bottom. Are you very compacted or not? And then typically, I also recommend colonoscopy so I can see what's going on. You'd be surprised how many patients come with constipation. We actually end up finding something on the colonoscopy to explain their constipation, whether it's a big polyp or a lesion or even, gosh forbid, something worrisome like a cancer that could be there. And for some individuals, we'll do what's called anal rectal manometry. I will check the rectum muscles to see if it's too tight, if that's the root cause of why you're having the constipation. Now, once we do that, then we figure out what's going on, then we try to classify what type of constipation that you have. So if you have IBS-C, there may be medications we give you. If you have chronic idiopathic constipation or slow transit, there may be dietary changes, lifestyle changes, or medications we want to give you. Or if it's pelvic floor dysfunction, we may want to have you see a physical therapist to see if we can get your pelvic floor taken care of. But for all these patients, lifestyle changes can make a difference. So a couple of things I want you to know about this. People always ask me, what is the best diet for constipation? Let me just tell you, we don't have a lot of good studies on what the best diet is for constipation specifically. Now, we do know for diarrhea, a low carbohydrate diet or a low FODMAP diet can help with diarrhea, but not for constipation. We don't have a lot of data for this. So being on a Mediterranean diet or diet that's high in vegetables or fruits can give you the fiber that you need to get you better bowel movements. Tip number one. Tip number two is that I do recommend adding additional fiber. So Bena fiber or Citracil are fibers that I recommend. They're typically synthetic. They don't cause a lot of bloating side effects. It can get you going, get you flowing as well. Number three, I would consider adding some magnesium or Miralax. They both kind of work the same on different mechanisms, but they help you to have a more effective bowel habit to make sure you're going more consistently and having better poo as well. Number four, I want you to get into a routine of your letting your body know when it's going to go. Develop that rhythm. Go every single day, try and go and see if you can set your body at a rhythm to make sure you go and flow. Number five, don't bring your phone into the bathroom. That's the worst thing you can do. I know you guys. You guys are scrolling on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, LinkedIn, wherever. Don't do that because that's going to make things worse for you as well. Then incorporate some lifestyle changes, including things like avoiding some of the trigger medications, adding some coffee, things like that. And sometimes we may have to do further investigation for the treatment or a combination of lifestyle medications to hopefully get you going and flowing. This is my deep dive on constipation. I hope I answered any questions you guys have about that. So a question that was asked, hey, Dr. Islam, how much water should I drink to help out with constipation? It's a good question, and we get this all the time. You're going to get all sorts of information out there about how much water should you drink. Should it be a gallon? Should it be 8 ounces? How much should you drink? So here's what I tell my patients. Start off with 2 glasses of water when you wake up. Have 1 before each meal and have 2 right before you go to bed. That should give you enough water to help out with constipation issues and to get you enough water to help out with hydration. And that typically is what I recommend. I have found that to be a helpful recommendation. It's general advice, obviously, if you're sweating more or if you have other medical conditions, that may be another reason to consider maybe adding more water. But that may be, that's the general rule I typically give for my patients to see what we can do to make sure we can get their water intake taken care of. Our next question about PPIs. Hey, Dr. Islam, I've heard about some of the side effects about proton pump inhibitors. What are my thoughts? Well, I see this commonly. Almost every single patient who comes to me has a question about their PPIs, their acid-reducing medications. There's so many myths that are out there, and there's actually some truth to some of those myths as well. So let me break it down for you, what I tell my patients. So there are risk factors that are real. We know that certain vitamins are and minerals are not absorbed correctly. Calcium, magnesium, vitamin D, and B12 are some of those particular vitamins. Number two, there is a risk factor developing certain infections on these medications, C. diff being one of them. Small intestinal bacterial overgrowth could be one, though the data is not so clear. Sometimes you can get some enteric infections as well. Number three, there are some individuals that may develop kidney issues. It's called interstitial nephritis, though it does not lead to chronic kidney disease. And then number four, for some individuals, the interaction maybe with certain medications that you take, it's not universal. It's quite unclear exactly which medications you could be on. What PPIs don't do is that there's no higher risk for Alzheimer's. There's no higher risk for chronic kidney disease, and there seems to be no significant risk factor with interaction with medications like Plavix. And so what I would always tell my patients is, number one, make sure you're taking the medication for the right reason, because if you don't know why you're taking it, that's going to be hard for you to justify taking it. Number two, consider being on the lowest dose possible to help out with your treatment options. And then number three, also consider to see if you can maybe try lifestyle changes to help out. Lifestyle changes have been shown to help out when it comes to acid reflux and heartburn. So try to incorporate that to see if we can really understand why you're on these medications and what we can do to get that taken care of for you as well. So those they ask, what kind of magnesium is good for constipation? So usually I recommend magnesium citrate. That's the one we typically recommend. It usually gets you better bowel habits. That has been found in a lot more studies to help out. I have a lot of videos on magnesium, so don't forget to check out my social media streams about those videos on what the best magnesium is for your constipation as well. Hey, Dr. Islam, I was just told that I had a close relative that has colon cancer. When should I get my colonoscopy? This goes to the heart of what I do, which is to prevent colon cancer. So colon cancer, unfortunately, is the second leading cause of cancer death in the United States, but is the most preventable cancer that's out there. And the best way to prevent this is to do your colonoscopy. So get it done. So everyone should get their colonoscopy at least at the latest at the age of 45, at the latest. Now, there are a couple exceptions to the rule. If you have symptoms for any other reason, okay, that's a different scenario. You should talk to your doctor if you have any symptoms, blood in the stool, diarrhea, constipation, pain, you may need a colonoscopy further. If you have a first degree relative, brother, sister, mom, dad, who's had colon cancer, you probably need to get your colonoscopy done sooner than the age of 45. Or if you've been diagnosed with a genetic syndrome like Lynch syndrome, or you have somebody who's a close relative to you that's been diagnosed with that, you're at risk for that. These are individuals who need to get their colonoscopy done before the age of 45. But if you haven't and you've not gotten yours and you're over 45, come see someone like me where we can find out what's going on and hopefully make sure we can prevent colon cancer from ever becoming a problem in the future for anyone. All right, guys, I want to thank you for watching. I think we got through the live stream. I want to thank you for watching. Every Monday, I go live on my social media streams to answer your questions you guys have. Don't forget to join the podcast. If you like what you hear, if you like what you see, don't forget to subscribe to my channel, subscribe to our newsletter, and come see us up at Gastro for all your GI needs. Thanks and take care, everybody.